Good morning. Greetings in Jesus' name. It's certainly been good to be here. Enjoyed the service so far. And pray that we can continue to be blessed and encouraged. I'm not sure what you want to label it as, but I wasn't expecting to have to preach this morning. So maybe it's kind of off the top of my head and hopefully from the bottom of my heart that I share, but maybe not quite. I've been thinking about this subject for a little while, so it wasn't quite off the top of my head. But Brother Ed was planning to come and share this morning, and then he canceled and is thinking about maybe coming next Sunday. I'm not sure if that's going to work out yet either. So anyway, just for your information there. This sermon is was suggested to me as well, and I lumped it into the relationship sermons, and at first it maybe took me a little bit of time, or it took me a while to realize that it fit in there. I'd like you to turn to Romans 13. I'm probably going to break a lot of rules as far as how to share a sermon and as far as the context and not taking an entire sermon from a few words, but again, it's maybe I didn't put as much study into this as I could have. I would say that. Romans 13, and you recognize that this chapter has to do with authority, and that's what I want to talk about this morning a little bit. One little tiny aspect of authority. I thought about sharing about forgiveness or love or something like that. You know, I don't feel like we're done with this subject of our relationship with God and how that relates to other people. But anyway, I felt led to go this direction this morning. So I would also say that a lot of this is kind of from my own journey, and I'll be sharing some stories a little later about some things that I've experienced, and I want to talk about that. Now, I've been told that I have a little bit of a tendency to zero in on a subject, you know, just talk about one little thing, and I know that's what I'm going to do this morning. Pretty definitely. Hopefully, maybe shoot it full of holes. I don't know. We'll see how it works, I guess. I don't very often recommend books other than the Bible, but I would recommend you to read the book Spiritual Authority. It's not the Bible. It's by Watchman Nee. I was recommended to read this book a number of years ago. And you all know Brother Johnny Erb. Him and I were talking one day, and we ended up talking about this book. And I said, yeah, I know. I like that book. I like his message, or what he has to say about spiritual authority, but I don't feel like he's very balanced. Well, Johnny says, well then, Brother Alan Trock, you write the book. You write it right. So I started thinking about some of that and how would I write it? Anyway, I'm not sure what I would say. I talked about in one of the first messages about relationships, about boundaries, and this is a boundary that I feel like maybe more than any other boundary I have crossed and made relationships frustrating in my own life. And you notice other people and their relationships, and you'll see the same thing if you open your eyes and look. People that cross the boundary of in authority have frustrating relationships. They find relationships frustrating. They find there's just a lot of problems. So I think it's good for us to look this subject in the face and think about some things. I'm not trying to preach to anybody in particular, maybe myself in particular. All right, Romans 13, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. And of course, this is talking about our government. This is talking about the rulers of the land, our country. But I think there's some things that apply all across the board to authority. And it's kind of interesting to me that the Sunday school lesson had to do with that. And there's a lot of thoughts that we're just going to continue on and think about right from the Sunday school lesson. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. I'm just going to stop there. You know what the rest of the chapter is about. You know the context. There's not a lot of need to read the rest of that at the moment. Here's what I would like to talk about, and the title of my message is They That Resist. I want to think about that aspect of authority. And it really has a lot to do with my problem, not, again, you talk about the subject of authority or you tackle that, there's a whole bunch of things we could talk about. We talk about how authority should be, how people under authority should act. There's a lot of things that we could talk about, but I'm going to zero in on this thought that it says here in verse 2, whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. Now, for just to think about resistance, think about Brother Brian's driveway and maybe Caden, you probably like to go sledding down that drive. Is that right? You know what? You know, a sled is not supposed to have resistance, right? It's supposed to slide. But think about if there was some gravel on the drive. You know, it's getting warm and the gravel's kind of showing through. And you try to sled down there, and you know how it is when there's gravel. You try to make the sled go, and it goes for a few feet, and then it stops. Just kind of scrapes on that gravel, and it stops. That's how, yeah, just think about that. What if you try to sled all the way down the hill, and, you know, you got to do this. You got to kind of make the sled go the whole way down, or kind of paddle with your feet, or with your hands and feet, and try to make the thing go. Would you jump up and say, well, that was such a fun ride down the hill? Probably not. You wouldn't do it again. That's resistance. We want efficiency. We want to just slide down the hill. And sometimes there's a lot of things we could think about. We could think about a business, and you know how those of you that work in the workplace especially, you're familiar with this thought, but if somebody just has a bad attitude, just does not like what the boss is doing, you know what that's like. You know what that does to the atmosphere of the of the workplace, of the attitude toward the job, of the production of the work. All kinds of things are hindered. Resistance. I hear sometimes, you know, God made me the brakes. I'm to hold this organization or this church or whatever. I'm supposed to hold it back so it doesn't get going so fast, I guess. Think about that. Just think about resistance, that thought. Especially attitude and all of that. Turn with me to Isaiah. Isaiah 14. I like to think about where resistance come from. And maybe along with that, why God has such a problem with it. Well, there's lots of stories we could think about through the Bible about that exemplify this and just explain this. But Isaiah 14, and I think we'll start at verse 4. It says that this is, take up this proverb against the king of Babylon. But as you read it, there's more here. It's not just about the king of Babylon. And I think we recognize that. I think pretty much all Bible scholars recognize that it's, like it says in verse 12, it's talking about Lucifer. All right. That thou shalt take up this proverb against the king of Babylon and say, how hath the oppressor ceased, the golden city ceased? The Lord hath broken the staff of the wicked and the scepter of the rulers. He who smote the people in wrath with a continual stroke, and he that ruled the nations in anger, is persecuted and none hindereth. The whole earth is at rest and is quiet. See, he was done away with. He was laid to rest. And if I'm understanding right, the king of Babylon was still alive at this point. But it's speaking in prophetic terms that this is the way it would be. The whole earth is at rest and is quiet. They break forth into singing, yea, the fir trees rejoice at thee and the cedars of Lebanon, saying, since thou art laid down, no feller is come up against us. Hell from beneath is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. It stirred up the dead for thee. Even all the chief ones of the earth it hath raised up from their thrones, all the kings of the nations, and they shall speak and say unto thee, art thou also become weak as we? Art thou become like unto us? Thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of thy vials, the worm is spread under thee, and the worms cover thee. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, that didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into the heaven, I will exalt my throne above the stars of God, I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High, yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble and did shake kingdoms, that made the world as a wilderness and destroyed the cities thereof, that opened not the house of his prisoners? And there's many things that we could think about in many different subjects in this passage. All the kings of the nations, verse 18, all the kings of the nations, even all of them, lie in glory, every one of them in his own house, but thou art cast out of thy grave like an abominable branch, as the raiment of those that are slain, thrust through with the sword, that go down to the stones of the pit, as a carcass trodden under feet. Thou shalt not be joined with them in burial, because thou hast destroyed thy land and slain thy people. The seed of the evildoers shall never be renowned. Prepare slaughter for his children, for the iniquity of their fathers, that they do not rise, nor possess the land, nor fill the face of the world with cities. For I will rise up against them, saith the Lord of hosts, And I will cut off from Babylon the name and the remnant and the son and the nephew, saith the Lord. I will also make it a possession of the bittern and pools of water, and I will sweep it with the besom of destruction, saith the Lord of hosts. And that is why that, okay, all of us have this resistance. We know what it is. It's ingrained in us. It's a part of us from little children. I don't know how little, but it can sometimes happen at a couple of months old. Just that standing up against and refusing to submit to authority. That problem is because we are children of the devil. That is why. It's carnality at the core. It's how do I describe it? We know what it's like. It's self-will. That's evident so early in the life of a child. It's that feeling of resentment toward authority or toward those that are over us. Just that rising up, especially when there's unjust treatment, or we suppose it's unjust treatment. And I might mention this too. I think this thing is deeply ingrained in us, and I say in us as the people of God. We live in America. America is very much a patriotic, independent, you know, we are very anti-authority, if you really think about it. We'll sit around like, I'm talking about Americans as our American nation. We sit around like hawks and just want to pick at and attack any problem, any minute problem that might be an authority. Maybe it's perceived or real. That's us, and we're influenced. I think we as Anabaptist churches are very much influenced by that. You look at some of the scriptures that talk about the end times, and that feeling, that package is there. This resistance can be expressed by, you know, loud protest or revolt, or it can be clear to quiet insubordination, or just simply refusing to acknowledge law and order and so on. That even all the way to the attitude of, as long as I'm not caught, I'm just going to keep doing it. That kind of thing. That's what I'm talking about. In marriage, of course, it can be the silent treatment. And those of us that are married probably know a little bit about that. Hopefully just a little bit. All right. I want to talk about some of my history, and these stories aren't really, I don't know what you would want to call them, anything glamorous for me. I remember being a teenager. Well, let's see, maybe I wasn't quite a teenager anymore. I was probably about 20. I remember very definitely the day I leaned up against the our oven in our kitchen there at Augusta and folded my arms and told my mom and dad just how it was going to be. I remember that very clearly. I also remember. I also remember January 30, in 2008. It snowed an awful lot that day. I think it was a couple of feet. And that was the day I was ordained. And my folks were out. And they took Bev and Sean home from church that evening. My wife and I just went on a little drive. Some of the things that happened in the ordination service, I don't remember very much, but I do remember that I was kind of in shock about what had just happened. And so my wife and I went on a drive. We went down the freeway and come in kind of the back way to our place, and there was somebody slid off the road and stuck in the ditch. And so I told them that I'd be back. I just had our little vehicle and couldn't do much with that. So I went and got my chip truck, and we pulled them out. My dad and I come back and pulled them out. But what I remember most particularly was getting home and sitting around the table and talking about what I did in 2000. There are some things that had to be made right. And I don't know on my part. And I don't know how to explain how I knew that because of being ordained, some of those things from my past had to be taken care of. But I knew it. And I knew that it had to be taken care of. And so we talked about those things. Oh, my. I remember another incident, and this happened in 2003. We were living in Payette, and in a lot of ways it's a trivial incident, but it had a profound effect on me, really, I think. I was driving truck, and we were coming up 95 with our trucks, the fellow I was working for, and we loaded straw in Grangeville. I don't know if you recognize the towns and all that, but anyway, loaded with straw in Grangeville and then headed south. And just before you get to Riggins, there's a Scales. It's a little jump, just a little. You're right by the river. It's a little wide spot. And anyway, it was open that day, and Mr. Kitchen was in there. Some of you might even know him from Pinehurst. And he jumps up on the step of my truck, and he, of course, I opened the window, and he said, "Okay, if you want to play farmer, I'm going to play cop. Are you ready?" I was like, sure. I had no idea where that come from. I had, of course, met him before, but that bothered me deeply because of his expression, his resistance. I actually think that he thought it was one of the other truck drivers. And I heard later that they had a pretty big discussion one day. But that bothered me. Why would he tell me that? Okay, that's enough stories for now. Talks about shall receive damnation back there in Isaiah. I'm sorry, Romans, not Isaiah. Wasn't Isaiah. Shall receive. That is an absolute. Those that resist shall receive. And I think we do well to ponder that. This is not me saying this. This is what the Word of God says. Shall receive. I'd like you to think about this. How much resistance is it going to take for us to receive damnation? Let's think about that seriously. How much resistance? And this is the point that I want to push to the very end, that there can be absolutely no resistance. No resistance to authority. And I don't know how to make that clear, but God hates the resistance. It's not that he hates, God does hate authority that does not correctly administer its responsibilities. God hates authority that does that. But there's this heart of, or this resistance in the heart is what God hates. And it's because it's like, it's just like the devil. It's like his opponent. And we, as children of God, we need to learn to hate that rising up. Anytime that it rises up and you say, well, I can't help it. Well, we'll talk about that hopefully at the end. This time is going way faster than it should here this morning. Damnation is a very strong term. And we should think about that. Damnation is ultimate punishment. It is separation from God and all that is good. And we cannot imagine. You see, God is in this world. God is in this sin-cursed world. And there's a lot of things that happen. It was talked about this morning. There's a lot of things that happen that are bad. But you know what? There's a lot of things that happen that are good. But when there's damnation, when we get to that part of judgment, there's the absence of anything merciful. There's the absence of anything good. It's total absence, and we can't even hardly imagine that. But there's something that's so sinister about this damnation. You shall receive damnation. It scares me to think about. But judgment on sin is eternal, because the consequences of sin are eternal. In other words, the beginning of them, the birth of the sin, once the sin happens, once it starts rolling, the eternal effects of that never stop. And we need to think about that in this sin especially. I don't like to implicate other people. But I want to explain my point about this. You know that day that I stood there with my arms crossed? There was a lot going on beyond that. And it had to do with particularly my dad and his resistance to the authority in his life. And beyond that, Grandpa had a real problem. Again, I said I don't like to implicate people. But beyond that, my great-grandpa, I know some stories about him as well. You see what I mean? That the damnation is there because the sin is eternal. In other words, what I allow and the resistance, how much resistance I allow, is going to be passed on. And that's a fearful thing. I think we ought to think about that. It's not only that ourselves lose the possibility of sitting in the presence of God. It's not only that, but it's the generations that follow. And it never ends. You understand the depth of that. And I just want to plead with you to think about if there's any sin that we need to get rid of in our churches, it's this sin. Hebrews says, and I don't know if it's talking about this sin in particular, but in the Amplified it says it this way: let's lay off the sin that so deftly and cleverly clings to us. Let's lay that off. Isaiah 14 again. There's some verses we read there that explain it better than I can, what I'm talking about. Right, last phrase of verse 20. The seed of the evildoers shall never be renowned. Prepare slaughter for his children, for the iniquity of their fathers, that they do not rise, nor possess the land, nor fill the face of the world with cities. For I will rise up against them, saith the Lord of hosts, and cut off from Babylon the name and remnant and son and nephew, saith the Lord. You think about that. That's damnation. All right. I know that this sermon does not answer every problem about authority. It doesn't hardly answer any of them in a lot of ways. But you think about the humanistic efforts that are in our time let me say it this way. All humanistic or human-originated efforts to correct this problem are always directed at government and forms of authority. Did you ever think about that? It is the authority's problem. That's why there's rebellion. And I don't know the answer to all that. But that's how, as humans, that's how we look at it. But you think about this. You think about the gospel and what it does for us. The gospel is not so much for the abuser as the abused. Think about that. It's not so much for the oppressor as the oppressed. It's not about changing. In so many ways, it leaves the oppressor untouched. Doesn't do anything for him. Think about that. I don't know what all the answers are for the problem, the epidemic that we have. I don't know what all the answers are for it. And I'm not so worried. This might sound bad, but I'm not so worried about your resistance. I'm worried about mine. I have a lot of work to do. Now, don't get me wrong. I do wish that, you know, that the gospel would reach your heart and that you would be free. But I'm not so worried about your resistance. I'm worried about mine. People that resist are in bondage. And I find again and again myself in this, with this problem. And again, I would just say that as far as this problem is concerned, I know that Jesus Christ is the answer. I'll get to that in just a little bit. But as far as this problem in our churches, in the Anabaptist churches in America, I don't know about churches in other places, but I do know about a lot of churches here, and they're in trouble. And it's on this issue. I think if we are honest, we can think about many, many situations, there's this uprising or there's this resistance. And again, you look at the promises of the last times and what we're going to face, and it's a very bleak outlook. I would just say that. It's a very bleak outlook. But Jesus Christ, it's the same as any other sin problem. Jesus Christ is the answer for the sin problem. He is the answer. It is the cross of Jesus Christ. There's a song that, I got to quit somewhere here, but there's a song that the youth sing, were singing, and I believe it was Brother Joe Weaver introduced this song, and this song, again, had a profound effect on me, thinking about, I'm just going to read the chorus. It says, "Come and be perfectly broken. This is God's plan. Perfectly broken by an unseen hand. Return all the pieces, your heart and soul. Be perfectly broken and be perfectly whole." And I think we can connect with that. We can think about that. There's hard things in life. And really, that's the cross of Jesus Christ. To break us. To break this spirit of resistance in us. And it has to be broken. I don't know of any other way that we can really, truly be changed than to be perfectly broken. That's my desire, is to be perfectly broken. Shall we kneel in prayer?